Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So welcome, everyone. So this month is the month of Damodar Astikam, Damodar. Damodar is the transcendental form of Lord Krishna appearing within the material world. And the form of the Lord is not different from the Lord. These forms of the Lord are called Akila Rasamrita. Akila Rasamrita. Akila means the reservoir, how can you describe the source, the reservoir of everything, the rasa nika. One who contains all rasa. In other words, there is rasa. Rasa means very sweet taste. It's like when you eat sweet rice, you get some rasa. You get some rasa. That rice, the taste you get is the characteristic of that thing. Everything has its characteristic. Just like you have your characteristic. A cockroach has its characteristic. An ant, a bird, a tree, everything can be understood by its characteristic. We understand things by their characteristic, by their character. So when we ascertain an object, we study its quality, and the quality, the characteristic quality of that thing. Just like the example, of course, with food. Each food has a certain characteristic taste. Just like you have sweetness in sugar. But in chili, you have hot, pungent. If chili is sweet, then it's not very good. And if sugar is hot, it's not very good. So all of us have our characteristic. We all have our nature. Unfortunately, at the moment, that our nature has become mixed up with some foreign element. So our real characteristic is mixed up. Of course, Prabhupada gave the example like water. When water comes in association with a cold atmosphere, its characteristic becomes transformed artificially. So the nature of water is aquatic, liquid. And when it becomes associated with the cold atmosphere, it becomes harsh, hard. So even it can cut you. If you throw a cup of water on someone, it won't cut you. If you throw a block of ice at someone, they can cut it. Now, ice is water, but it's not water. So it's a contradiction, because the condition of ice, cube, is artificial. That's why the very nature of the ice will always start to melt. That's why you have to keep it in an artificial condition, in order to sustain ice. They have to keep it in the fridge. Isn't it? They have to keep it in a very cold environment. Because as soon as you move it out of its out of that environment, it again tries to turn back to liquid. So similarly, the nature of the soul is to love. The fundamental principle of the soul is to love. And these five characteristics are the manifestation of love, what is called Shantaras, Dasyas, Sakyas, whose principles of rasa are found, first of all, in mutuality, just like this Christianness has given me a mutual experience. This Christian is not my servant, is it? But it's given me service. But it's not really service, it's mutuality. And that is that I have a relationship with the cushion. Of course, in the material world, the cushion is dead. It's not a live cushion, it's a dead cushion. So my relationship with it is not very high. But then I have a higher relationship, servitude. Someone is serving me, just like someone brought me a cup of milk. That's a better relationship than the cushion. You understand? I'm having a better relationship with that servant. Because the servant is a conscious relationship. It's above mutuality. It's not mutual, it's servitude. That means that someone is serving you. So, from service, all of us, we get a certain kind of taste, isn't it? If you were served all the time, you'd be very happy, isn't it? Suppose you had thousands of servants all the time thinking about how to serve you. You'd become very happy. Can you imagine having hundreds and thousands of servants whose only business is to think how to serve you? You'd become very So we see that, generally speaking, there's in the material world we have a mutual relationship with matter, and then the matter becomes more transformed. In other words, when as soon as matter is associated with the living force, then these living characteristics come in. This service can only come from a living thing. You see? In other words, the cushion serving me, but not out of its own volition. You understand? It's not serving me out of its own volition. But when there's a conscious principle, then there's choice. There's choice. In other words, servitude generally has to be done out of choice. Of course, there is forced servitude, but that's called slavery. That's not... There's no, again, that's not a natural condition. So we find that, generally speaking, these relationships become progressively better according to the degree of consciousness. So servitude is there, and then there is friendship. So friendship is higher than servitude. Just like someone may have people working for him in his company, and that's servitude, but he may have friends who he plays golf with, who he has relationships with. They're not treated the same way as his servants. Even though his servants in his company may give him more service, they may do more work for him, but they don't have that quality of intimacy, because they're not his friends. They're his servants, but they're not his friends. So we find that the characteristic of consciousness is manifested in these types of rasa, the mutual servitude, friendship. So generally we find, if we study children, we see in child psychology they start playing with toys and things, and then as they get more progressive and consciousness develops, they have friends. They have friends. They want to play with their friends, isn't it? And then when you become more developed, Then there's relationship with the parents. One has relationship with parental relationship. And then when there's more development of consciousness, one enters into conjuga. Conjuga means this relationship between boy and girl. This is very tasty. This is the, what do you call it, the sweetness in the material world. But even though you might have a relationship with your toys and your friends and your parents, but when you come lala, then the real stuff starts, the lovey-dovey stuff. So everyone waits patiently for that moment to come when you can have conjugal rasa. Conjugal rasa is very sweet rasa in the material world. The characteristic of conjugal love, the reason it's so sweet is because it gives satisfaction to all the senses. You see? Matter, just like a fast car, a nice house, a nice cushion, it can give you a certain amount of satisfaction. Your friends can give you a certain amount of satisfaction. They might give you satisfaction. Or your servants can give you satisfaction. They may do very nice service for you, they may work for you, they may do so many things, clean the pool, clean the pool, clean the house. Still, not quite tasty. Friends can give you a nice boost for your ego. They can do so many things. You can have so many relationships together. A conjugal rasa for you. Even parents have a certain degree of rasa, but the conjugal rasa gives satisfaction to all the senses. You see? Because the woman and man, there's satisfaction of the tongue, the belly, the genitals, everything is stimulated by this rasa. You see, therefore it's a very high degree of rasa in the material world. So this neutrality, servitude, friendship, parental love, conjugal love, these are all existing in the spiritual realm. They come from the soul. They don't come from dead matter. They don't come from dead matter. They actually are characteristic. They're the fundamental characteristic of the soul. And they have to be understood because they are intrinsically linked with consciousness. As soon as you have consciousness, as soon as there's consciousness in the body, there's aspiration for a relationship. Nobody, just like if you sit in this room, how long you can sit there until you start having a relationship with somebody, isn't it? You'll soon start thinking, hey, my belly's feeling very empty. I should have a relationship with some nice food, some nice drink. Oh, your eyes are having a relationship with the neutral surroundings. Oh, you want to get in touch with your friend. Oh, you want to get in touch with your parents, or your lovers, whatever. You find that this is the driving force behind everyone, is these relationships. And therefore, Vedic literature is the only religion, the only philosophy that explains where these things come from. You see, where do they come from? Why is there very, very good at this? Just like we see that variety is the spice of life, the mother of enjoyment. The varieties of these, what do you call them, tastables, these tasty things. Just like in this room, there's so many variety of faces when you look around. Some people have a big nose, small nose. Some people have certain kinds of eyes, certain kinds of ears. Nobody looks the same, isn't it? So you can guarantee from each person in this room you're going to get a different type of relationship, isn't it? Some people you're going to like, some people you're not going to like so much, some people you're going to, you can become lover or whatever. That is the nature of the material world. According to how we try to relate to the different types of living force. There's living force. We are interested in living force. Just like you can't really fall in love with a house. But you can very easily fall in love with your children that live in the house. Understand? You can't fall in love with a big, big sky. It may be a wonderful big sky, but you don't fall in love with the sky. But you can very easily fall in love with a person. So this loving propensity is characteristic. This loving propensity is there in everyone. And this is why this monk, Dhammadharastakam, is loving Krishna as a child, which is actually extremely difficult for people to understand how God can be a child. Because everyone thinks of God the Father. You know, generally we think of God as being a supplier. God should be our supplier. This is the natural religious psychology in every religion. If you go to Islam, Allah Akbar. Allah Akbar. Akbar means very great. God is great. Why is it good that God's great? Because I'm not great. And therefore, if God's great, it's pretty good to have someone around who's great. Because then when I need things, I can get it from the great. You see? If we need something great, we need to take it from the great. Isn't it? Everybody wants something great. We're all looking for some superior experience. So naturally, in religion, the idea of God being great is a general principle. And therefore, most psychology in religion is to get something from God. Either we want to get, when we die, we want to go to heaven and get our wings and fly around with God in the garden, playing on our violin or whatever. Or we go to some beautiful Svarga. Svarga, the Hindus, where you go to these beautiful planets of incredible sensations, apsaras, and all the beautiful gardens, and you be going around and enjoying all sorts of nectar, and hearing beautiful music of the Himalayas, and wandering in the lakes and ponds, and the mountain air, and all of these things. And in the Christian religion, there's also this idea that when you, after all your piety, because of Jesus' blood on the cross, you'll finally go to heaven. Just like when people die, they're going to say, oh, George went to heaven. They haven't got a clue why George went to heaven, but George went to heaven. Aunt Maggie went to heaven. God bless her soul. She went to heaven. Nobody talks about she went to hell. We never hear anything about anyone going to hell. We always went to heaven. Because we're always in this expectant psychology. So we want always to superior. God should bring us into a superior condition because we're all abruptly aware of our inferior experiences here in the material world. We are constantly harassed. Adi Devaka, Adi Bhutika, Adi Atmaka, Klesha. Klesha, the word Klesha means inflicted on you. Something that's inflicted on you. Just like when you don't want something that's been inflicted on you. It's a very nauseating, very upsetting experience. That's why generally we all like to keep a little space so we don't get attacked by horrible neighbors, the people we don't like. We all suffer from adibhautika. Bhautika means other living entities. Mosquitoes, mice, rats, cockroaches, snakes, tigers, horrible neighbors, mother moors, whatever you want to call it, they're there. They're out there everywhere. The adibhautikas. There's beings in them. Billions and billions and just trillions of them. Trillions and trillions of adibhautikas. All waiting to inflict on you some horrible punishment of some kind. So therefore people are always very much disgusted. Actually the Prabhupada says, familiarity breeds contempt. In the material world everything is contentious. We actually hate other people. We try to like them. We put on some sort of psychological acceptance, but deep down we hate that. I can't stand it. That's how courage is there. But, of course, because we have to live with them, we have social, civility. Civil laws. Don't smack people on the nose. Don't steal their property. Don't go after their wives and shoot their mother-in-law. All those laws, so that we can maintain ourselves in this hostile environment. Adibodhika means hostile. Actually, people are hostile to our aims. The only time people become accepted, suddenly a lot of things, adibodhika is going on. The only time people become acceptable is when we can use them. You see? If you see the enthusiasm for other people is when you can use them. Just like if I meet a pretty girl, I'm very enthusiastic. If I meet an ugly old hag. What is going on here? Is there something? No, but this noise.
It's that feedback sort of stuff.
It's not the Prashad, it's the standard. And thousands of echoes. So, when we can use people in our service, we become very enthusiastic. So that's generally why we surround ourselves with friends and lovers and people who are serviceable. That color is not good. Soon that color is so much. Well, I can't shout. But there's a reason for it. It's the feedback. And it sounds better. That's better. So, we find that this characteristic of employing people in our service, then that makes people, just like you find, Africa, they have a thing called servants. And people have these big, big houses with carriages and big cars. And they have these beautiful wives and children, but they also have a bunch of servants. And generally the servants are not very educated, they're not even very good looking, they don't have any money, but they let them stay in the house. They actually give them facility, they're there all the time, because they're exploitable, they're usable. They can be used for our personal satisfaction, so therefore we accept, we tolerate, and those people are able to share a luxurious lifestyle to some degree. So we find that the attraction and aversion for people is generally how much they can be used in our service. And the same thing goes for God. God is attractive to people in the sense that God can give us some service. All religion is totally materialistic. It's completely selfish. There's nothing unselfish about being religious. The idea that you're going to go to Sparta or heaven, or the heaven of the Jews, or the heaven of the Muslims, or the heaven of the Hindus, it's all the same. You're going, it's just like getting a ticket to Hawaii. It's just that this particular place you're going to, hopefully, is going to be a lot better than Hawaii. That's it. If you study religion, it's only another aspiration for a higher existence. The same thing is going on in the material world. People want higher existence. So they get a good job, they serve someone, and that person gives them a salary, gives them a car, gives them a house, gives them a facility. So therefore, in most religions, the idea of God is he should be very serviceable. Not that we should be his servant, but he should be our servant. That's generally the idea of God. That God give us our daily bread. God do this. God, oh my God. Oh my God. Will you let this happen again? So, generally the psychology is that when things go wrong, then immediately we bring in the word God with the hope that he'll sort it all out. Or either he should be blamed at least. So, generally this idea of being dedicated to your God there's usually tinged with various types of Kaitala. Kaitala means craftiness, chicken mentality. Chicken mentality that if I do pious activities, then I'll get some good result. If I fast, if I do particular types of austerities, if I do various types of renunciation or whatever, then I'll get some result. So this is good, because at least people are going to God, which is, generally speaking, a move in the right direction. But the attitude of the person is not good. Therefore, in the Bhagavad it says, Sarvai Pam Sambhurdhamo Yato Bhakti, the hooks again, or the Kiyapapriyataya Yapas Pasiriti. And that occupational duty, in other words, that what is the meaning of occupational? That characteristic. The characteristic of the soul, or the occupational duty for all mankind, is by that which one attains to transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord. So this transcendental loving service unto the glorious Lord is a completely different category altogether, because this transcendental loving service is a hoitikiya pratyutta. So this worship of Krishna, Bal Krishna, baby Krishna, is very nice, because in actuality the idea is that Krishna is reciprocating with his devotee. He's reciprocating with his devotee in a helpless manner. So one may think, how can God be helpless? It's completely contradictory, or completely inconceivable idea. That very difficult for anyone to understand how God could become dependent. Because God is a big sphere, he's the complete independent. And in all religions, God is ascertained to be the omnipotent, the omnipresent, the omni this and the omni that, isn't it? He should be omni. What is the meaning of omni? Of course, in Sanskrit it means purnam. Om purnam, but purnam idam. Purnam means complete. Completely potent. God should be completely potent. So people ascertain that mostly with the idea that God is the creator, God is the maintainer, God is the destroyer. That is the idea most people have of God's omnipotency. But in actuality, the Vaishnava literature is much deeper, because God is also the omnipotent yoga. He is the greatest lover. And out of love, he accepts this wonderful relationship as a son to his devotee. This is the highest characteristic of love. And just like, if you could understand that, put yourself in the position of God, everyone in the whole creation is shaking at your name. Everyone is adoring you in awe and reverence. Everyone is seeing you as the all-powerful, the almighty, the greatest. So that kind of relationship is not actually very sanguine. It's not very conducive. It's nice, but just like if you, suppose you walk down the street and everyone's shivering in fear of you, that's not a very deep kind of relationship. It's a shallow relationship, because it's not based upon the person, it's based upon the power of the person. So the relationship with the person, we find even in this material world, the big president of America, or the big boss of a company, the real relationships are when he's at home. You know, his wife nags him, kids pour pee all over his trousers. These are things that happen in family life. And even though he might be the president of a big country, Prabhupada gave a very nice example. He said that one time the American ambassador came to see the Israeli Prime Minister of England. And at that time he was on very important business. And he was asked to wait at number 10 Down Street. He was asked to wait outside. So he waited for about an hour. And he still wanted my waiting room. He could hear noises inside the office. I said, I'm the ambassador to America. So he peeked through the keyhole, and Disraeli was on all fours, going around the room with his grandson on his back, going, beating him like a horse. So this ambassador will understand that we become preoccupied with his grandchild. So therefore, we can understand in the previous example that similarly, in order to enjoy the sweetness of dependency, you see, there's also a sweetness in dependency. There may be a certain characteristic of God as the controller, but there's a much higher sweetness of Krishna being dependent on his devotees. Krishna being dependent on his devotees, because Krishna likes to be chastised. We never thought God would like to be chastised. Anyone can identify that God likes to chastise, but not that God likes to be chastised. But actually, Krishna likes very much to be chastised by his devotees. There's an example of that even in the Mahabharata, when Bhishma was in relationship with Krishna as warrior. So it is said that when Bhishma used to fire the arrows into Krishna's body, whenever the arrow would go into the body of Krishna, it would be like a love bite for Bhishma. It was like giving Krishna a love bite. And then the love would bite. So this is the rasa. Krishna liked very much for these arrows to hit him from his devotee. So we can't understand, you see, how one who is destroying, the biggest killer in this world is God. He kills everyone. If you talk about a serial killer, and God takes the trophy for a serial killer, because he's killing everyone. So therefore, when his devotees are fighting him, he enjoys very much. He likes very much. So that rasa is there between Jisma and Krishna. And also between Mother Yashoda. Mother Yashoda became very angry with Krishna because he's always stealing his makam chore. You know the meaning of chore? Thief. God is a thief. You never thought God was a thief, did you? He's also a very good thief. The reason that you have thieving propensities because they're in God. Everything that we have, although in the material world it's a pavilion, but the original state is in God. So Krishna likes to steal. Sometimes he steals the gopis' garments. Sometimes he steals Mother Yashoda's milk or yogurt and gives it to the monkeys. So one time when Mother Yashoda became so fed up with this rascal Krishna, so she chased him with a stick. So Krishna is running like anything. He's running. And Mother Yashoda says, "Come here, you rascal, I'll beat you." So when Krishna saw that stick, he thought, "I better get out of here," and started running. But she ran after him with greater speed. She ran after him with greater speed. There's no one faster in the whole creation than God. If Krishna's sitting 25 trillion billion miles away, he can be here, not even in 1 micro of a second. Prabhupada said Krishna can reveal himself to you in 1 micro of a second, and he's sitting in Vaikuntha. So no one can move faster, and yet Krishna allowed himself to be captured by Mother Yashoda. And he was trembling, and tears were coming down his eyes. So Mother Yashoda became very disturbed. "Oh, I frightened him. I frightened him too much." But she didn't see Krishna as God. That is the beauty of Vrindavan. Vrindavan, there is no God, Godly consciousness. This is God, 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 God. There's none of that. Vrindavan is the transcendental abode of love. This love is manifested in these five rasas. So Vrindavan is Goloka. Go means rasa, the land of rasa. Vrindavan is the land of rasa. So therefore, in that land, one can enjoy all of these transcendental mellows. Dasiras, Sapiras, Vatsayaras, Madhuriras. They're all there. Just as they're here in the material world, they're all pervading. Everywhere you go, if you go into the insect kingdom, the fish kingdom, the bird kingdom, you'll find these rasas. They're all there. Every single plant, even the tiny microbes are having rasa with each other. Relationship with each other. The insects, the birds, the animals, the trees, everything is having a relationship. Everything has relationship. That's why we should understand how the whole cosmic manifestation is all relating to each other. We call it biosystems, or cosmic, what we call solar systems, or relationships, whatever. They're all relationships. Just like I have a relationship with everything around me. I have some relationship, and everything is around me has a relationship with me. So therefore, we can understand that the sweetness of accepting Krishna as child is very confidential. It cannot be studied unless one is devotee. Unless one is the devotee, then he cannot enter into this Dhamma-dharashtra. Where's the purse? Dhamma-dharashtra.
Top joy.
So, this relationships, actually previously in India, there are different sampradayas. And generally these sampradayas are, if you study the sampradaya, Ramanuja, Shankara, all of these sampradayas, none of them can explain these rasas. They generally speak about all reverence, the idea of accepting God. So here it says, the Supreme Lord is formed as the embodiment of eternal existence, knowledge and bliss, whose sharp-shaped earrings are swinging to and fro, who is beautifully shining in the divine realm of Gokula, who, due to the offense of breaking the pot of yogurt that the mother was churning into butter, and then stealing the butter that was kept hanging from the swing, is quickly running from the wooden grinding water in fear of Mother Yashoda. So the idea of God having fear is too incomprehensible. Can you imagine trying to explain to a Muslim that no one's frightened against the devotee? So that is why one can only understand God by hearing. We can't understand it because we generally, when we talk about relationships, they're all what you call projections from the material world, anthropomorphic. We have some experience of this miserable world from our miserable body. And these relationships are all miserable. So generally, the idea of the relationship in the spiritual world is just another projection of misery. We can't escape. You see, just like our relationships here are sweet grass full of sand. So generally, we think of the spiritual relationships as also in some sort of converted constitution. But in actuality, this fear of Krishna for his devotee is a pure manifestation of the love that Krishna has for his devotee. That Krishna's love for his devotee is so powerful that he becomes completely subjugated by that love. He gives himself completely. Love means to give yourself completely. Without any reservation. There's no reservation of love. And just like in the material world, what is the highest experience of love? Is the unreserved love for the mother for the child. If you see children with their mother, and you see mother with their children, you get a little indication of unreserved love. Because the child is a complete inconvenience to the mother. And what does the child do? Basically dribbles and does all sorts of disgusting things. And the mother is happily cleaning up for that child. Cuddling it, kissing it, joking on it. Now, in actuality, if you thought about it, the child has nothing to offer whatsoever. Nothing. The child has nothing to offer except itself. You see, the only thing the child has got to give the mother is itself. And the only thing the mother really gives to the child is herself. So this is the real meaning of giving. Unreserved love. So therefore, when a devotee surrenders unreservedly to Krishna, then Krishna also surrenders to his devotee unreservedly. Because Krishna says, Yayam Mam Prabhajante. As they surrender unto me, I reciprocate accordingly. So therefore, this relationship of child to mother, child to father, is one devotee that says, what am I in need of chasing after the philosophy of the Vedas, or trying to understand God through the Vedas? Rather, I will worship Nanda Maharaj as my prasanta, as my guru, because in his courtyard, Krishna is staying in the courtyard of Nanda Maharaj. And yet, all these great yogis and sages and mental speculators and philosophical speculators and everybody, they're all pursuing God through literatures and through different types of austerities, different types of worship and temples, and different types of this and different types of that. And yet, if we worship Nanda Maharaj, Krishna is already, God is there in his courtyard playing with his shoes, bringing his shoes for him. So therefore, one devotee has observed that. Why should I bother with any other type of shelter? Rather, I can take shelter of Nanda Maharaj. Seeing the witness stick in his mother's hand, he was crying and rubbing his eyes again and again, and with his two lotus hands, his eyes are filled with fear. And the necklace of pearls around his neck, which is marked with the three lines like a conch shell, is shaken because of his quick breathing due to crying. To this Supreme Lord Sri Damodar, whose belly is bound not with ropes, but with his mother's pure love, I offer my humble obeisances. So the very belly, that belly that the whole universe comes out of, everything you see in this universe comes out of the belly of Lord Vishnu. That same belly has been tied up by a rope by Mother Yashoda. So that's quite incomprehensible. Just like if you try to tie a rope around this universe, you have a bit of a problem. But that same belly from the whole universe is coming. Actually, all the universes come from the body of Krishna. And Krishna is tying up Yamuna. So by such childish pastimes as this, he is drowned in the inhabitants of Gokula, in pools of ecstasy, and is revealing to those devotees who are absorbed in knowledge, who are absorbed in knowledge of His Supreme Majesty and opulence, that He is only conquered by devotees whose pure love is imbued with intimacy and is free from all conceptions of all and reverence. God is not interested in all reverence, because all reverence is crafty business. Some craftiness to us. We're in awe and reverence of God because He has something. Just like when someone has a lot of money, you're in a little awe. When someone's a big movie star, you're in awe, isn't it? You're in awe of what they have. You're not necessarily in awe of them. Just like Henry Kissinger, he was a sort of short, plump, fat guy. But he used to say how all these women were chasing after him because he had so much power. He was the chief of the Nixon administration. So they were attracted to him. He was very attracted to God, but in actuality he was an ugly looking fellow. But because he had so much power, people were attracted. So this whole reverence is generally associated with the energy rather than the energetic. Whereas this love for Krishna, which is imbued with intimacy. Imbued with intimacy means that when one actually enters into the intimate relationship of devotional service, one becomes free from all conception of all reverence. With great love, I get offer my obeisances to Lord Damodar hundreds and hundreds of times. O Lord, although you are able to give all kinds of benedictions, I do not pray to you for the boon of impersonal liberation, nor the highest liberation of eternal life in Vaikuntha, nor any other boon which may be obtained by executing the nine process of bhakti. O Lord, I simply wish that this form of yours is Balagopala in Vrindavan, this baby in Vrindavan, this beautiful baby of Balagopala in Vrindavan may ever be manifested in my heart. For what is the use to me of any other boon besides these? O Lord, your lotus face, which is encircled by loft blocks of soft black hair tinged with red, is kissed again and again by Mother Yashoda. So this is the beauty of the devotee. The devotee can kiss Krishna. It's like, who ever thought of kissing God? That idea of kissing God and covering God is very alien to most people. You know, just like if you try to explain to someone that you're kissing God so much, they say you're nuts. How can you kiss God? But this is the beauty of God. God is so wonderful that he can reciprocate his devotees in all kind of tasty rasas. It was called Akila Rasa Mita Sindhu. He is the reservoir of all rasa. And that is the real meaning of God. Not this other idea of simple power and opulence, all of those things. So, six. O Supreme God, our upward basis unto you, O Damodara Ananta, O Vishnu, O Master, O my Lord, be pleased upon me. By showering your glance of mercy upon me, deliver this poor ignorant fool who is immersed in the ocean of worldly sorrows and become visible to my eyes. O Lord Damodara, just as the two sons of Kaviri, Manigriva and Nalakavira, were delivered from the curse of Narada and made into great devotees by you in the form as a baby, tied with a rope to a wooden grinding mill. In the same way, please preach to me your own prema bhakti. I only long for this and have no desire for any kind of liberation. So this word, any desire for any kind of liberation, is very important, because everybody comes with this idea of getting some kind of liberation. As Krishna says, these four types of people come, those who are in distress, isn't it? You want to get liberated from your distress, so simply call God, hey God, come on, get rid of these distresses. O Lord Dharma, first of all, offer my obeisances to the brilliantly folded rope which binds your belly. I then offer my obeisances to your belly, which is the abode of the entire universe. I humbly bow down to the most beloved Srimad Bhagavatam, and offer all obeisances to the Supreme Lord, who displays unlimited pastime, Sri Damodaras Pitam Puja, and Chilipal Bhagavad Gita. So we'll stop there. Are there any questions, Lord?
These pastimes, are they more the local Vrindavan or just in
Brooklyn? No, the pastimes are loving Krishna. In parental, that is your German pastimes.
I heard some of the very younger pastimes or something.
Well, there's no third. The only ones I've read is that it says that there's no birth of Krishna, and that some of the pastimes that go on in Gokula are not manifested in Goloka. Some of the pastimes that go on in Goloka are not manifested in Gokula. So there's some technical, but there's definitely none of the Yasoda in Goloka.
Is it possible to have more than one relationship with Krishna?
The thing is, you know, these things are not really discussable. What goes on in the spiritual world is unlimited. So, according to the rasa of the unlimited with the living entity, in other words, Krishna has particular rasa with his devotees. And, you know, just like Arjuna is in billions of the universe at the same time. So you could say Arjuna is having billions of relationships with Krishna in different capacities. But it's the same Arjuna. So there are very difficult things to understand. So if that's going on in the material world, what's going on in the spiritual world? Better wait till you get there than you can answer those questions. All you should understand is that there is no limitation between Krishna or his devotees. There's no, you can't measure things. Just like here we like to measure everything. Here there's no measuring. The measuring stops. So when you talk about your relationship with Krishna, it's not good to try to think about your relationship there, but rather wait till you get there. But if you try to speculate on it, you know, just like what is it? Flowers look like they are either the same ones either here, or do they have more stems or more leaves or maybe like the bumblebees, it's like trying to understand reality by studying the shadow. So we're living in a very limited, temporary, inadequate atmosphere. So to understand the adequate is incomprehensible by studying the inadequate. So all we've got to understand is whatever goes on there goes on. It'll be definitely a lot better than what we're doing now. That's for sure. You have more questions?
I saw it, but different. It's just that this past time reminds me of, you know, my mother just showed us Capture Krishna with love, and then I heard a few times the Prabhupada said one time to the devotees that I've captured Krishna with love and I'm holding him here for you. Do you remember that?
I was there.
Yeah, I must have heard you say it.
Mm. Yeah, he held his hand. And I captured Krishna. Because that is how you get Krishna from his pure devotee, nowhere else. Because only the pure devotee can give Krishna. So the pure devotee is the reservoir of Krishna. Krishna resides in his heart. And he can't go away from it. Therefore, he can truly destroy Krishna. And that is why Krishna says, you approach my pure devotee, they can give you Krishna. All the examples of benedictions of people getting Guru Maharaj and all that, they're all from pure devotees, the Narada Muni. So, the pure devotee, they have captured Krishna. If you want Krishna, then you go to Mary Shoda, she can give you Krishna. You go to Nanda Maharaj, you go to Siddhanta, you go to Rupa Goswami, you go to Radharani, they can give you Krishna. You can't get Krishna from books or from anything like that. Although you can get, obviously, by reading the Vedas, by studying the Bhagavad, and because the Bhagavad is given by his pure devotees, therefore has extraordinary power to give you Krishna. But generally speaking, just searching after Krishna here and there is not adequate. So Krishna says, "Don't worry about it. Don't search out my devotee. He will give you tattva darshana, tattva darshana." Because he has seen the truth. He has seen it. So therefore, just like Sri Ramana Goswami said, if you want to understand the Bhagavad, you go to the person. Right? If you want to understand the Bhagavad, Bhagavad means Krishna. You have to go to the person Bhagavad. The Bhagavad devotee. Bhagavad devotee. Okay. Thank you very much. I didn't know you had a son. God. Sri Radha Dhamma Rora 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 Dham